Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
Welcome in once again. It is another edition of Line to Gain here on the Buffalo Rumblings Vidcast Network. I am the big O, Jerry Ostrowski, out in Tulsa, Oklahoma. She is Sarah Larson down in Miami. And we will talk a little bit about some of the goings-on of what happened today at One Bills Drive, some of the moves, some of the comments that were made. We'll also talk a little bit about last week's game, but not too much as we've kind of beat that to death already, and we'll get into this week's game as well against Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Bucks Thursday night in Buffalo. But real quick, Sarah, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm actually in New York, freezing my butt off.
Oh, shoot, I forgot. Yeah, you're at your sister's.
Yes, I'm at my sister's. Yeah, I went and saw my son over the weekend, right outside of Boston, went to the game, and then drove from there to the Finger Lakes area. I'm at my sister's. And then I will drive to Buffalo tomorrow. So definitely, a nice couple of days, but it's been beautiful, but I'm just not, accustomed to the weather, obviously. So I'm freezing all the time.
I have to apologize. If you see my head doing this quite a bit, it's because my Phillies are on in game 7 against Arizona. It's 1-1 in the top of the fourth inning. Yeah, man. First time in franchise history that the Phillies have been in a game 7, which I could not believe. Yeah. But it is. So if you see me kind of nodding off, if you ask me something and I don't respond,
we could have recorded some other time. It's not a big deal.
There's not enough time. And to be honest with you, I take baseball kind of like NASCAR racing. The start's really good and the finish is really good in between. You just kind of have to keep an eye on it and, pay attention, but it's really not understood where all the, a ton of the action is. But hey, we're going to get in. By the way, great welcome in on your 50th, which is a big milestone.
Thank you.
Your 50th game in a row, and you had to witness that.
Yeah, I know. I know.
In person to mark your 50th. So,
it was really cool. I went over to the tailgate that Pinto Ron does every year at Foxborough and everything. And he was bragging on me to everybody. So, it was
cool.
How
old is Pinto Ron now?
Huh?
Do you know how old he is?
He's in his mid 60s.
Okay.
Yeah. So, bragging on me a little bit to everybody. So, it was nice to have, him cheer me on and how many people were excited for me, to reach that milestone. Now everyone's questioning how far I'm going to go. So
I will say this, if we keep playing the way we've been playing, it's probably going to be a little bit harder than it would be.
I got to give him props because he did it throughout the whole, the drought years and everything else. I just know that, over the last 4 years, the cost to do this has more than doubled annually. Maybe even a little bit more than doubled. So it's the amount of the away games are ridiculous. The cost, because they know that Bills Mafia will pay.
Well, I have a plan for you.
You have a plan?
Okay? Yes. You're going to keep posting those pictures that you post on social media, and we're going to find you a sugar daddy and he's going to buy you one of those Sprinter vans, one of those pimped out Sprinter vans. And you're just going to, you know, for X amount of months of the year, you just
I would live in one of those things for a couple months. I would love it.
Yes. If you can tell me you can get close to a king size in one of those, I'm down.
Yeah. You know, the funny thing is most people read that I've, you know, or see that I've been to 50 games and they all think that I'm going to be their sugar mama. So it doesn't quite work the same way. They're all like, she must be rich. No, I just plan really well.
Lots of plasma donated in the offseason.
Yeah, no, and it definitely does take a toll trying to figure things out. And then you want to get the best price. And then it's like, should I wait? Should I book now? Like, it goes back and forth a lot. So,
well, the thing for me is the health aspect of it. It wears me out. Like flying anywhere just wears me out. And to do what you do, I just couldn't do it.
It is definitely a lot. Last year I got sick twice. Luckily it didn't change, you know, my travels or anything, because, you know, one of them happened like right after Thanksgiving. So I had like the 10 days, and another one happened during, you know, right after the off season or right after the playoffs. So it definitely does, you know, take its toll. Luckily I haven't, let me knock on wood, I haven't gotten anything this year to really be concerned about. But, you know, I knew 8 people in London that got COVID or the flu. Oh, yeah. So I've been lucky so far. So, but we'll see how long I can do. I don't know. If you have to start donating and sponsoring me to do all the travel, I will wear your t-shirt. I don't care.
I'm your agent. So if you want ideas, you just ask me. I got ideas.
I'll run them through you.
Speaking of ideas, Brandon Bean makes a move right away this morning, restructures Deion Dawkins' contract, frees up about what, $3.9 million. Yeah. And right away, people take that as an indication that the Bills are going to make a move before the trade deadline. What do you think about that? Anything?
Yeah, I've been going back and forth. I think that there is a good possibility that, you know, we can do something with that money. We definitely can. There's a lot of people that are expecting something huge. It won't be huge. 3.9, we had no money, like literally no money. So 3.9 is not going to do much, but, you know, it could do a D-hop at this point. So there's a good possibility that we get D-hop, a good chance that we could get D-hop. I'm not saying there's a possibility. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are pretty much just saying that it's money to, you know, to kind of keep on the side. John Worrell replied today that, you know, it's kind of money, you know, just in case there's more injuries and then, you know, anything else that needs to happen or anything during the rest of the offseason. And bonuses, someone will reply back with the bonuses, but the bonuses and incentives are part of the salary cap. So I don't know where they were going with that. D-Hop would only cost about 1.2-ish, maybe even a little less because of how many games we're in. But it's, you know, I think I replied back to somebody 9/16 of his base salary and 9/16 of, there's what? 8 games left out of 17. So 8/17 of the base salary and 8/17 of the per game roster bonus that he gets. The rest of it's on the Titans. So if they're willing to part ways, you know, I think that it's something that we should look at.
I agree with that. But I think also, too, you have to start looking corner. Because a move was made by the Eagles this week where they sent Tremaine Edmonds' brother in that trade. And I kind of looked at, who are some of the players we have that could actually lure a team to trade some talent for us?
I would have said, before we found out that Knox was having wrist surgery, Knox would have been one of the top people on my list.
I have two others. One of those is Elam. I know we are short at corner, but he's inactive
much
anyway.
Of anything, right?
I that's the thing. You're talking about a former first round pick with a lot of skills,
that
new atmosphere,
much,
right? Yeah. But a new atmosphere, a new coaching staff, a team that feels that their style fits him best,
and four more years,
right? And four more years
because he was first round, so he has a year option.
The other guy that I think is trade bait, and I know it, and this kind of depends upon, because we did not see Von Miller very much this week. But to me, if Von is coming back and he's going to start playing more in the way that Floyd's playing and some of the other guys, you've got to look at AJ Epenesa. And you got to look at you. I know, but let's face facts. This is a guy that's been released and brought back. Out of the norm.
Yeah, we were both, you know, like, it's either going to be him or Boogie over the offseason. Now we're like, no, Epenesa is one of the best people on our defense right now.
AJ Epenesa.
He's still only playing. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt, but he's still only playing about 30% of the snaps.
Right.
So, yes, there is that.
Him
is
and,
a good
and maybe if you can't part with him and you feel like he has to stay, is Shaq Lawson a guy? I don't know. I just threw that out there.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to look at positions that we might have some players that other teams would be interested in now that, and I agree with you, Knox was a prime trade candidate until the wrist surgery. So, yeah, I think that there's, it could get interesting, but I think if a trade is made, you're going to lose some commodities, and those two guys come to mind off the top.
Well, and that was the thing with Hop is D-Hop isn't owed anything really this year left. So that's why I kind of threw his name in there, because we wouldn't have to trade a piece, but we would have to release a piece because we do have 53 men. So we would either have to put someone on IR to bring him on. So, you know, all that is an option, definitely. But I definitely think as much as we want a wide receiver, I think corner is what's killing us right now.
Yeah, corner is a struggle. Secondary in general is a struggle, but corner definitely.
Yeah. And I think that realistically, you know, we have to be a little concerned about linebacker now, because they took out, I don't know why they took it out. I'll be honest. I have not rewatched the game because I, you know, been traveling and then spending time with my family. I don't really know why they took Williams out of the game. Dorian had such a good game the week before. I mean, did they score?
2-1.
All right.
Let's do this. No, all right. I think you're right. And McDermott made a comment about he struggled on some plays. Of course he will. He's a rookie. But the thing about him that I love is he's got a motor and he loves to play. And he can make up for some mistakes with his speed and the stuff he does. So
it's not like
Dotson went out there and set the world on fire, right? But so how do you learn as a rookie?
Yeah, I think that Dotson has moments, but I feel like Williams can overall just play better.
Right.
So I feel like we should have Williams out there and then, you know, spell him with Dotson coming in on a few plays here and there. Dotson's just so terrible in coverage. We are getting burnt downfield, like terrible. And even like, you know, the over the middle passes were ridiculous as well this past weekend. So
Williams' style of play is a lot more like Tremaine. He's a see the ball, get the ball guy. He's a run stuff down. He's fast. He doesn't have that necessarily behind the line of scrimmage slash ability that Bernard has, but that's not really what they brought him in to do. He's an outside linebacker. That's what he's going to do as a wheel linebacker.
Yeah, you know? So we have to figure something out. I was hoping that we were going to really talk to what's his name and talk him back out of retirement.
Once you retire, you're done.
Not everyone to ask Brady.
Well, that's different. I mean,
ask Gronk, because Gronk
75. That's another one. 75%. Brady and Gronk is better than 90% of the league, right?
So, you know, but there are talks about Gronk, you know, making some comments about the Bills again. You know, I don't know how I would feel, because how many weeks would it take him to really get back in a game, you know, like game fitness and readiness? And I don't know. I mean, it would be a cool idea, but whether or not it would actually work, I have no idea. But
one thing,
you know,
he's the same age
as Kelsey. So,
right. We keep talking about D-Hop. And one thing I do like about him is I do like his attitude. I think he is a bit washed. He's older. The Eagles went out.
But he wouldn't be number one.
Right. The Eagles went out and picked up Julio Jones. And
same idea.
By God, he played. Yeah, he played the next week. He made like 2-3 catches. He was productive. You know, if D-Hop is going to, I don't know if he's going to help us get out of funk of the pass game or not. But I think that John and Joe last night on off tackle said it best. Why are we trying to go out and bring another receiver in when we haven't really tried Hardy? We haven't really tried Sherfield, we haven't really tried. You know, we got other guys that we've given limited time to. If we're really hell-bent on the fact that Gabe Davis is a wash and it's starting to look like Gabe Davis is not going to be that guy, why are we not trying these other dudes to see what they can do?
And I've agreed with that, but at the same time, I feel like they would be trying to scheme them open a little bit more. And if they are, then these guys just aren't getting open.
Well, we had this conversation last night, Sarah, and that's where I think we're lacking somewhat at receiver, is we're not running a scheme to get open type thing. I think we do. And this is really weird subject. It's a touchy subject because, yes, they do run schemes to try to get guys open. But I think that our stuff is more relied upon talent and those types of things, where when you look at Miami, you look at Philadelphia, look at Kansas City, it's plug and play with receivers, right? As long as they've got kind of similar traits, that's fine, because you're going to run these different routes over and over again because we're going to scheme you open.
Right. And for those people who did not watch the Minnesota game versus San Fran the other day, I suggest you watch it, because they're missing, you know, Justin Jefferson. Addison comes in, makes catch after catch. He goes out for a few minutes injured. And then they have their third and fourth string out there making catch after catch. I mean, Kirk Cousins looked like he was an MVP candidate, you know, the other
Cousins
day.
Cousins is a good quarterback.
I think he's between 10 and 12. I think, you know, if we sit there and kind of, you know, he's between 10 and 12.
If we're talking the 10th or 12th best quarterback in the world, it's pretty good.
Yeah. No question about it. You know, not everyone feels the same way about him. But I definitely think that he's a very capable quarterback. He is a game manager. It's just my only concerns with him has been when the game is on the line. I've had questions about him. But he played well, and you know, he wasn't the one that choked the other day. Purdy was the one that threw the interception. So,
well, I think, they're starting to show him some things he hasn't seen before. And that kind of that new shine or that new car shine is kind of, it's a little bit dirty now because, you know, they're scheming him up a little bit and showing him some things he hadn't seen before, you know?
Right. Yeah. And the more people get to know Purdy, the harder it's going to get for him. So, but I like him as a quarterback. I just, I'm realizing that, you know, people are starting to come down to earth on him a little bit more so lately, because he's not doing all the crazy things he did last year and whatnot. So,
well, hey, we're going to go ahead and get into the Bills rewind. We're going to talk about last week's loss against New England. But real quick, before we do that, here's a word from our sponsors.
Nothing builds the thrill quite like seeing our Buffalo Bills march right down the field. Every pass, every play, and every touchdown. But for those of us who have to catch the action blurry, it's time to call Ficta, Endel, and Elmer Eye Care and schedule a consultation. With Zeiss Smile technology, you can have your vision corrected in moments so you can get back to focusing on what's important. It's a quick, pain-free procedure with a world-class team, and you're back in the action. Visit us online at Ficta.com and take our free self-evaluation test to see if you are eligible and schedule a consultation. Because here in Buffalo, we don't just watch the game, we live it. Ficta, Endel, and Elmer Eye Care. We are focused on you.
Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. As a parent, you want your child to have every opportunity. But giving them the tools they need to tackle every challenge, that takes a team. Now more than ever, educational support tailored exactly to what your child needs can make all the difference. That's why parents have trusted Sylvan Learning for 45 years as the ultimate teammate in their child's educational journey, instilling in them a love for learning and a passion for reaching the next level. And Sylvan's Insight Assessment can identify gaps in learning and areas that could be of concern for your child. It's a 360-degree view into your child's learning that you can't find anywhere else, and helps ensure that your child didn't miss something in school that might put them at a disadvantage in the future. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's SYLVAN29.com.
So before we get into the actual game, something I kind of wanted to know about, and just so everybody knows, I'm going to let Sarah run with this segment quite a bit because unlike me, who's had multiple opportunities to talk about this game, and actually I'm kind of tired of it, but I'm not tired of it. Sarah has not. So I'm going to allow her to have the floor, and I'm going to kind of guide her along with some things. And right off the bat, one of the things I wanted to talk about, Sarah, was you're at the games. Obviously, the New England crowd's big for New England, but when you look down at that Bills sideline, did they seem like the Bills of that you always see? Did they seem up? Did they seem – how was the energy of this team rolling into this game?
It reminded me of the Cincinnati game. It really did. Like, it felt like no one had the passion or energy or the, you know – like, it's almost like they didn't want to be there. I don't know if it was meant to feel that way or if it was, you know, they kind of came in. I hate the whole, you know, the whole adage that, you know, you're playing somebody that you know you're supposed to win and, you know, becomes one of those games. We played down to our opponent again. And that's where we got caught up last year and the year before. We would play down to certain opponents, like the Jacksonville game, where it was, 9-6 a couple years ago. Like, I just feel like that's the energy we went into the game. Definitely completely opposite of the way we played against Miami. You can see the passion. You could see the energy. You can see there was a different vibe. And they kind of, you know, like I said – you know, they marched down the field. We held them to 3, but then Josh comes out and throws an interception on the first play. That didn't help matters. Not only was the team kind of deflated, the fans were too.
Let me ask you this, and this is something else that I was curious about, because when you talk about energy on the sidelines, it can be affected by a lot of things, right? And if you can't be an energized team at home in front of your home crowd playing the Dolphins, then you probably should get out and go sell insurance. But did you feel that this was a down feeling, or the energy was down because they felt they had it in the bag? Or is this something where when athletes, it's kind of like walking into a gunfight and you've got a stick, right? Did you sense maybe this team was headed into this game and maybe they weren't fully confident in their game plan or what they had going on? Well, I mean, I know it's hard to tell from the stands, but
I don't think they're confident at all. And they're playing very unconfident.
Right.
They've been playing unconfident for the last, you know, 2 weeks, now 3 weeks. So I feel like that's probably something that, you know, they don't feel that confidence. I feel like they get it in the fourth quarter, but I also feel it's like in the fourth quarter is when they're just letting it, like, reckless abandon. Like, let's just play football. Let's just enjoy ourselves. We have nothing left to lose. And I was literally going to tweet that during the game in the fourth quarter. Like, okay, we have nothing left to lose at this point. Right. They're up by 2 scores. Just go play football.
And that's what happened.
Just give us something to build upon next week.
Right.
Then for the fact that we went ahead after the turnover, I was like, okay, guys, you know, and then the tables turned. The defense was dependent on the offense to finally get something going. And then it kind of felt like it was in the, you know, a couple years ago in the playoffs where, you know, we finally get it all going. We get there and now we need to depend on the defense for that one drive. And we couldn't get it done.
And you look at the Bills in the first 10 plays, they were in their two tight end personnel, I think, 4 times. They were in their 3 wide out, what we call 11, 3 times. And then you saw them hop into what people call empty, meaning there was nobody in the backfield other than Josh Allen. I thought it was pretty – I don't know if you could tell much in the game, but I thought it was pretty evident that whatever Belichick and that defensive staff had put in for a game plan this week, the coverages were confusing the Bills receivers and Josh Allen early. And it's kind of why they hopped into the empty look to try to clean up you know, where these DBs were, who they were covering, and because that's what you do to try to clean up coverage is you add more guys, get guys spread out and create space. I thought some of Dorsey's adjustments were good. I mean, I thought what Dorsey was doing early was very, very good as far as adjusting and trying to figure some things out. But again, just, you know, dead in the water. And a point that you wanted to try to make or you wanted to talk about, and I agree on, untimely penalties put the behind the sticks and really, really, you know, had a penalty that took a touchdown away.
Yeah.
Just really, really hampering this this football team.
Yeah, we started the season out. For the first 3 weeks, we were averaging about 4.5 penalties a game, 4.75, I think it was. And, you know, so it was, we were one of the least penalized teams in the NFL the first 3 weeks. Last 3 weeks, we've been averaging 9 per week. That is a game killer. The Jacksonville game, it was over 100 yards penalized on 11 penalties. You can't win games like that. It's, I mean, yes, there's once in a while here and there, there's certain reasons why you can pull off a victory, especially if you're winning the turnover battle or whatever. But when you're not winning the turnover battle, and on top of that, you're getting all these penalties, especially the penalties that are extending these drives. So many times on defense, we are getting these penalties that give them a first down, and they get another free four downs to continue their drive when they should be going off the field. And it happened way too much last week or on Sunday, way too much. And it started in London, and I kept on saying, well, another third down, another penalty extending third down. You know, we need to figure that out. To me, it's both execution and coaching. We need to figure out on both sides, because we're not playing good structured football. They're right. Playing like they have like no care, almost like it's careless football.
I think, Sarah, with this penalty situation, it usually comes down to two things. The first thing is fatigue causes penalties, and I think that was definitely the case in London. And then the other thing that causes penalties is mental being not mentally sure. Maybe not quite knowing what to do, maybe being confused, and that causes penalties as well, because you're not mentally locked in. And when you look at the penalty problem, and it coincides with some of the worst football this team's played, especially offensively, it makes sense, does it not?
Yeah, it does. I mean, especially London, like you said, the time of possession was, I mean, so badly, it was just such a disparity between what the Jags had and what we had. I can see why, I think it was 7 defensive penalties during that game. But little things like, unsportsmanlike conduct and stuff like that, you know, Ed Oliver got flagged, I think, twice in one game for that. He got flagged again against the Giants game or the game before that? He's been flagged a couple of times. He's been, flagged a couple of times for that. So I feel like, he needs to clean that up. Obviously, we're better with him on the field. So, we need him. We need him back and healthy.
Right.
But things like that, those are mental mistakes. Those are frustration mistakes. In my opinion. So you get frustrated with, things not going your way, and you kind of take it out at the end of the play. Those could be cleaned up. The offsides, as much as they're frustrating, I get you're trying to time it. Especially if they are, trying to rush the passer, they're trying to get off the ball quick on a blitz. And sometimes you don't time it all that well. And it happens. Those are a little bit here and there. Offensively, the offensive pass interference calls are killing us. It's now been, I think, 2 or 3 that we've had called against us. They're calling back, number one, they're calling back touchdowns, or the ball moving from the 2-yard line to the 17-yard line. We can't keep on doing stuff like that.
It was awful.
I know. Actually, the one play of the game that I actually recorded, because I get very superstitious, and the Patriots fans around me were terrible. So I'll just say that I've been there now 3 years in a row, have had an amazing time 2 years in a row, sat next to awesome Patriots fans, joking and laughing and an awesome time. And this time just terrible. Now, one of them finally apologized for, you know, being the way he was being. But the three guys in front did not. The fourth guy that was with the three guys kept on looking at me and like putting his head down, like he was embarrassed. So definitely added to a very bad experience. But you know, so the fourth quarter, when we started coming back, they turned around and were quiet. But then the second they, you know, they got the score right back in my face again.
Well, unfortunately, that's the way of everything that's going on around here nowadays. You can't, nobody can commingle. Everybody has to have a side, right?
Yeah. But anyways, I did record one play. You know, I was like, I'm going to get the first touchdown. And then I saw the flag being thrown and I'm like, wait a second. Well, so I'm waiting and waiting. Of course they're not playing the replay on the Jumbotron in there. So I rewind it on my phone. And someone, I don't even remember who tweeted, can someone actually post this play, this penalty that was such a big deal? It was incidental contact. Yes, if you look at it fast enough, you could.
Which play are we talking about?
The pass interference that was offensive pass interference that took.
Oh, that was no, that wasn't brutal on the officials. That was brutal on Murray. When the guy's back is turned, you can't go up and smash him.
Well,
I mean, there was no, these rub routes, these guys are so good.
Really, his back wasn't turned. So
they're really good at just getting by and all this. That was blatant. I can't back
up. Oh, you think it was blatant? Okay. So I've watched it.
It was
watched it three times.
It was done like a receiver that doesn't do it, or done like a running back that doesn't run.
I watched it three times and it looked like it was a crossing route. And as they were crossing, they bumped into each other, as that's what it looked like to me.
It looked to me like the guy before he could even turn, Murray was right into the back of him. There was no other guy around. It was like he just made a beeline.
No,
there
was two Bills. There were two Bills around because it was.
Well, I know there were two Bills around because they were trying to rub him, the one guy to get off for the route. But I'm just telling you that wasn't a missed call by the
officials. To me, it looked like incidental contact that they ran into each other as they were crossing. But
nobody argued that on the sideline.
Huh?
Nobody argued that on the sideline.
Well, what are they going to argue?
Exactly, because it was so blatant. I mean, it wasn't like they were flipping out.
No, but it's
saying,
not like you can replay it to argue it.
Right. I mean,
Twitter was going off about it. So I posted the video. But regardless, that was the one play. I felt like, you know, we got to stop with these offensive pass interference calls, especially in the red zone. So we'll see, you know, if we can get that stuff cleaned up, because I think at this point, you know, is for a team that's already playing that not confident, those are killers. Those penalties are literally game changing, you know, killers.
Now, here's something I wanted to ask you to change the subject a little bit, because you could see the whole field and see things going on in the game that you don't get to see on the television copy. But if you look at the sheet, Josh was pressured about 12 times in this game. Other than sneaks, they had one called run for him. And I don't remember many times, like maybe once he tried to take off, a couple times he tried to take off. But those are situations in the past where there would be no second guessing. The ball would be down and he'd be running. Now, could you tell if they were spying him quite a bit, or could you tell?
Wasn't really paying attention much to that. I felt like it was just part of the game plan again, that we're not running the ball. I feel like they've lost confidence also in Bass a little bit, which we need to figure that out. But like fourth and two, we end up not going for the field goal. It would have been like a 51-yard field goal after Bass missed the first one. Or the second one. And, you know, I feel like this is perfect. Josh is just going to do another bootleg and, you know, off to the side and get the first down. We're going to continue this drive. And they go to throw it again. And it's just, to me, it's frustrating. He is kind of that heart and soul of the offense. When he's thriving, seems like most of the other people are thriving. His presser today, most people, I'm sure have heard it this time, or at least, you know, read social media on it. You know, he was asked about, you know, if he's overthinking and, you know, why are they not, you know, running more? And obviously he kind of talked out of the whole, you know, running thing because of injury. And we want to make sure that we're being smart. But then he talked about being, you know, pretty much like a positive, you know, calm. And I don't think it works for him. I don't necessarily want sugar high, Josh. But I would take it over this. I think that he's too even keel. He's not, when you got Steph on the sideline, like screaming and yelling and trying to hype guys up. And then you have him sitting there like this, that it doesn't, it's not the right vibe. It's not the right, you know, it's not the right communication between
them.
It's like the
Cat Williams bit when he talks about his son that's hyperactive. So he gave him Ritalin. And he comes into the kitchen and he's sitting on the counter and he says, "What are you doing, son?" He says, "I'm thinking about running." You know,
he's thinking about it.
You're right. Yeah. I'm thinking about running. And it's like, I'm with you. I mean, and I kind of gave the example of Brett Favre. Joe feels that Steve Young is his comparison, which I agree with that. I mean, Steve Young and him are similar. But for him to be, for him to create energy and inject energy and get this offense going, to me, and I've said it last year, you remember I said it all the time, he's our best running back on the team. And whatever they're trying to do, they've got to free him up a little bit. Yeah. Because when he gets downfield, it's dynamic.
And he said it today in his presser, in the presser as well. He was like, you know, when the quarterback runs the ball, you're basically putting another blocker out in front,
right?
And you're freeing up someone. You know, it's hard to stop quarterback runs. It's very hard to stop a 6'5", 245-pound running back. You know, like, because that's he's both. He's a running back and a quarterback. It's combined, and he is. You know, I've complained about him being the most utilized running back on the team or the best running back on the team. I don't think he's the best running back on the team anymore. I think he's the most consistent. I think that if we have designed runs, he can do stuff that the Cook can't do because of his size. So I feel like I never wanted it taken all away. You know, so when I complain about, like, you know, well, of course, our running game's not that bad because we're putting in 750 yards from our quarterback. You know, obviously, we were all fearful of injury and everything else. But you are literally handicapping half of what makes Josh Allen great. Right. We need to figure out a healthy balance. And, you know, James Cook had a good game, but he still didn't run the ball enough. I feel like, you know, he had like four or five catches out of
that. Let me say something about that. And I said this before when everybody talked about getting Cook involved in the offense. And I said, do you really want to give him the ball 30 times and take the ball out of Josh Allen's hands 30 times a game? If this is how they want Josh to play, give it to Cooks 30 times. Because there's no reason.
I hear you.
You know what I'm saying? There's no reason to let him have the ball if you're not going to utilize what he does best. And, you know, there's a lot of talk going on about McDermott and him wanting to play complimentary football. And, you know, I can't get mad at McDermott because he's the head coach, man. That's his job. If he wants to tell the OC to run plays a certain way and have a certain style of offense, that's his prerogative because he's the boss. It's gone on for as long as we can remember. Right. I mean, I brought up a couple examples today. There was an instance where, if you're a long time ago, Buddy Ryan and Kevin Gilbride, who was at the Bills for a little while, got in a fist fight on the sidelines. And it really wasn't a fist fight. Buddy threw the first punch and tried to choke him. But that was because Gilbride went out, put his defense in a bad spot, and Buddy got pissed. There's a time when Roethlisberger was really, really tight with Bruce Arians when Bruce Arians was the OC at Pittsburgh. They were killing it, putting up great numbers. Tomlin didn't like it. They fired Arians and hired another OC because he wanted it run differently.
I have a question for you. When it comes to the OC and the quarterback, and so back in your day, when Jim Kelly was running the K-Gun, he was calling his own plays, in essence, correct?
Right, yes.
Do you feel like, because I feel like when we're kind of in a hurry-up offense and there's a couple of plays called and Josh just goes out and, you can see him tapping his helmet, audibling every once in a while and stuff. Do you feel like he's ready? Do you feel like he has the mentality to be able to, scout the defense, see what the defense has given him, and maybe go out and start calling his own plays to see? I'm not saying try to bring the freaking K-Gun back or anything, but something to that effect, maybe a little bit of both, where he has more audible opportunities, him and, Dorsey kind of, draw up a couple plays in their mind ahead of time. They're running, they're going faster. Now, obviously, if you don't pick up first downs, you're getting the defense back on the field quicker.
Just to jump in here, they do that already in the 2-minute offense.
Right.
Josh will have multiple plays at hand.
Right.
So they don't have to waste time
on better. Teams,
right. Okay. The K-Gun, the thing, and John talked about this last night and he did a great job.
I didn't listen the whole show. Sorry.
People think that it was a complex offense. And honestly, it was really, really simplistic. There was probably, 8 core plays we ran all the time. A few wrinkles here and there. But it was not this complex thing that people thought it was. It was really, really kind of the start of taking advantage of what the defense gave you. Being able, Andre doing a wonderful job of reading the blitz and cutting it off to a slant, hitting that slant all the time and until the zone blitz came in and took that away. And that's when things got a little bit more difficult. But, you have to have 2 plays at the line. Usually we had a running play. And a pass play, or we had 2 runs or 2 passes, we'd come up to the line of scrimmage, depending upon the look. A lot of times it was how the nose guard was lined up, how the tackle was lined up. Then we would call plays accordingly. So, yes, while that concept is cool, I don't know if hurry-up schemes aren't quite as complex as people make them out to be. They're very, very... It's pre-read stuff, and you already know where the ball's going before the ball snapped. So that's why, do I think Josh could do it? Probably over time. Do I think that's what the issue is? No, I don't. I think the issue is he is just not comfortable with what they're doing right now.
Okay.
No matter whoever calls the play.
Yeah, I've been looking, kind of just watching him. And someone said it today. I don't know if it was a presser or if it was one of the reporters watching. I don't remember exactly, but I remember skimming through and seeing a comment that he needs to kind of abandon the idea of working with what the defense is giving him, because they never did that before. Now they're trying to do more of that, but it's taking away from what he's really good at. Like, and his completion percentage has went up, 10% this year, because they're being too conservative.
Right.
They're taking the plays of what the defense is giving him. When you know that Josh is, we got to take some of those turnovers, but he's force the ball where it probably shouldn't be going, but guess what? We'll have a crazy catch here and there. And, just getting back into that groove again. And that's why I said something about the K-Gun, because I feel like if he's going out there kind of calling what he wants to call and running more fast-paced offense, and it's going through him and he's dispersing the ball the way he feels, in that moment, he feels who's playing well. I just feel like it's something to get us out of our funk. Because, you know, even though right now, in my opinion, there's not too many teams in the NFL that scare me. I don't feel like there's a clear, like, you have teams like San Fran losing 2 weeks in a row. You have Philadelphia losing to a backup quarterback. You have, you know, like, it has not been, like a clear cut lead, you know, leader of the pack. Now, Kansas City's still figuring out ways to win, but they still haven't looked exactly the way, you know, they normally do. If Kelce goes out, that offense is going to struggle. They literally run through Kelce. So no team really has stood out to me as being crazy, ridiculous, above the rest.
It's the ebbs and flows of the league now with 17 games and all these games overseas and all these Thursday games. You're never going to have teams be undefeated anymore. It's too hard. You can't play the number of games these guys play on Thursday nights and over in England, over in Germany, you know, back and forth. It's just not plausible. It's just not something that's going to happen. So if, you know, the 72 Dolphins want to get a truckload of champagne, do it, because they're probably going to be the only undefeated team in the league, because the league is not allowing good football week in and week out due to the strains that they've put on the players. But I think the biggest thing is this, and after this, we'll get to a fast forward segment and talk about this week's game real quick coming up against Tampa Bay. I don't think there needs to be this huge shift in offensive philosophy. Okay. I don't think there needs to be throw it out and start anew. I think that it all comes down to the quarterback position and allowing him to do the things that he does well. And you know what? I'm sorry, McDermott, but you're going to have to let this guy go be himself. And if it makes you have because guess what? You try to constrain him and he threw a pick the first play of the game. You know, you got to allow him to run the ball. And the thing is, as he gets older, some of those picks he throws in those scramble situations or in the quote unquote sugar high Josh mode, he can correct that. They're silly stuff. It's like the deep post patterns and digs that's double covered. And then you overthrow them by 10 yards and it's like a punt. Right. So I don't necessarily think that they've got to go have this whole change in offensive philosophy. They just got to get back to doing what they do, because it's even affecting the O-line play. I mean, the offensive line doesn't look as confident as they looked earlier in the year.
Right.
They've had two really subpar games in a row.
Well, someone tweeted to me earlier today that Josh needs to get rid of the ball faster. Do you feel like it's on Josh right now, or do you feel like every time he gets, you know, every time they snap the ball, he seems like there's a defender in the backfield and he's running for his
life? This week, the guy that everybody likes to talk about not being able to coach because he doesn't have his quarterback anymore, schemed the hell out of our football team. Offensively and defensively, they schemed us up better than anybody we played against this year. And one of the things they were doing, and Orlovsky, if you would go on Twitter and look up Dan Orlovsky, he has a kind of an explanatory video there about how he brought the extra pressure in certain spots that he knew that the Bills couldn't block. I mean, because one of the things about empty is you take a back out of the backfield, you got five to block five. He brings six, he's the quarterback's man. But to go back to your original point about he doesn't throw the ball quick enough, most of Josh, if the guy's open, throw the ball quick enough. I'm not worried about that. What I'm worried about is give him the freedom that once the ball does not come out because the guy's not open, allows a scramble situation, allows him to make plays with his feet. Because most
he
of Josh's
5-6 yards, like it's nothing.
But 99% of Josh's highlight throws that are top 10 ESPN or top 10 Sports Center are not on time throws. It's like the throw to Morris, you know, 2 games ago against, you know, against the Giants.
Yeah, he was outside the pocket. He was getting ready to run. Yeah.
Right. Those are when he makes the spectacular throws. And then he had the couple against Miami. So I don't think this is a thing where you've got to go ahead and just change everything. But you can't You can't turn a thoroughbred into a plow horse, right? You got to let him do what he does.
You're taking away, like I said, you're taking away 50% of what makes Josh Josh. So,
all right, this week the Buffalo Bills take on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Thursday night. If you're at the game, look for Sarah. She will be there. But before we get to that segment, a word from our sponsor, Picasso's Buffalo's Pizza.
Hey, football fans, the season is here. So you know that means family, football, and food. But for the NFL's best fan base, it can't be just any food. Bills Mafia only eats the best during the season. And the best is Picasso's Pizza. With four great locations in Western New York, it's so easy to treat yourself to the most flavorful pizza on game day. Picasso's. We are Buffalo Pizza. Shipping local and nationwide. Order online at picassospizza.net.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
So we got Tampa Bay this week coming into town on the Thursday night. Once again, another short week. Thank you, NFL, for putting our players in the most unsafe positions they could possibly be in. So we appreciate that. But obviously, I guess you would have to say that what's all the focus on, right? Whether right, wrong, or indifferent, Baker Mayfield comes to town. There's a guy that'll have a little bit of fire in him. Now, he might not have the greatest of game, but he's going to play confident and he's going to get after it. And they better not be sleeping on Baker Mayfield because he can get after it. He can make plays.
Yeah. He's been he didn't participate in practice yesterday and he's been limited today.
Ooh, I did not know that.
I still think he'll play. I don't think that there'll be, you know, any issues with him playing. Hopefully, I mean, it is what it is. It is his knee. I'm not sure if it's going to, you know, prohibit him from, you know, running outside the pocket much. So hopefully we try to scheme up some more, you know, blitzes, put some pressure on him. To me, he gets a little agitated anyways when he, you know, tends to be a lot like Josh. Josh does react well to the blitz, but sometimes he doesn't. So right. There are moments when, especially if they're getting to him, that he ends up having it, you know, affect him. But they, you know, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are kind of one of the teams that are pretty darn healthy for the most part compared to other teams. So they just been up and down this year. I can't put a finger on it. Right now, the Bills are 8.5-point favorites. Right. You know, and we're 4-3. They're 3-3. They had a bye week, so they've had a little, you know, time to rest already this season. So I just feel like I'm surprised we're 8.5-point favorites, especially after, you know, how we've been playing the last 3 weeks. But again, the Bucs, they'll have one game where they come out and they look great. Their offense is clicking. And then they have another game where they can't put up 6 points. So I don't know what Bucs we're going to get. The one game I do remember is playing Baker Mayfield in Cleveland a couple years ago. I think it was in 2019. We were up convincingly and they end up coming back and winning. And he actually ended up having a pretty decent game. But everything that's happened over the last couple years, especially with Baker being in and out of the you know, having an actual team, being backups. At this point in time, we can't have Baker beating us on Thursday. But, you know, the defense is going to have to prove that they can hold them to, I'm going to say, under 17 points. And if we can hold them to under 17 points, I'm pretty confident that the Bills can score more than that. Even through all our troubles, we're still averaging 25 a game. So I think the Bills are still not going to have a problem winning the game, but I said that against the Patriots. I just think that I'm just concerned about that point spread, to be honest with you. I think 8.5 is a lot. Hopefully the Bills at home, you know, but I said it against the Giants too, that they were going to come out and destroy the Giants, especially after the losing to the Jags in London. And that didn't happen. So I'm just hoping for Josh, the Thursday Night Football Josh, to come out. I think he's undefeated on Thursday Night Football. It's like he said earlier, it's a short week. They kind of come out with a more simpler game plan. They execute what they already have drawn up and move on.
Right. Some player comparisons. Baker Mayfield's thrown for 1,363 yards this year, 8 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 89.2 quarterback rating. Josh is thrown for 1,841 yards, 15 touchdowns, 7 INTs, and his quarterback rating is 100. One thing that's going to be impeccative for Tampa Bay to do against the Bills, and we'll see what happens, but they have not been very good rushing the football at all. Rashad White is their leading carrier. He's only gained 266 yards on 83 carries, 1 touchdown, 1 fumble. Cooks up over 400 yards so far with 1 touchdown.
Yeah, it makes him a little bit more one-dimensional. So
right. Mike Evans, obviously, the name is big. He's up for a new contract. He's got 468 yards receiving, 4 touchdowns, average over 15 yards a catch. So he can make some big plays offensively. The Bills have a huge advantage offensively over Tampa Bay. They're ranked 27th in total yards, 15th in passing yards, 29th in rushing yards, 26th in points, 10th on third down. Bills are still ranked very, and this is what's crazy, they're still ranked really, really high in most categories, right, especially third down at 48.3 on their percentage of third downs.
The one thing I'm going to say is, the Patriots were, 31st offensively, mm-hmm, I think, last week? Yeah. They averaged 12 points a game. They got 27 on us. Or what was
25? Bills defense, not great, pretty much run of the mill. 16th in total yards, 10th in passing yards, 23rd in rushing yards. They are 5th in points because they haven't played some teams that D'd us up and didn't score much. They're 5th in total points, 24th on third down. That's probably the glaring thing, Sarah, defensively right now. The other stuff is good enough to win, but the third down percentage isn't good enough, being 24th in the league. They got to get better there on third down, get off the field.
Yeah. It's supposed to be great weather, so I'm hoping that, weather doesn't play any factor in it. But as I said earlier, we got to figure out what's going on with Bass.
Yeah, and that is definitely concerning.
Yeah, and I mean, he's taken 6 points off the board last game or 2 games ago, 3 points off the board this past game. And to be honest with you, I said it before, if he would not have missed that kick, I believe Sean would have kicked a field goal instead of going for it on 4th and 2. We would have gotten 3 points back. Now, that 3 points might not have had a factor on the end of the game. But you never know, maybe at one other point, we would have kicked the ball or something. I feel like people are losing confidence in him and he's losing confidence in himself because of it.
Well, I will say this, and it's inexcusable at home because they practice in that stadium. He should know the wind patterns and all that. New England is just like Buffalo. There's some big wind. There's some issues there with the tunnel and all that. So even so, did they not just redo his contract a bit?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Which, I mean, he's been statistically one of the top 3 kickers in the league over the last couple of years. So it made sense to extend him. But we got to figure it out.
Well, I told you what the problem is.
Huh?
I told you what the problem is.
What's the eye black?
Got to get rid of the eye black. It's bad luck, man.
I'll make sure he hears that's what his problem is. He's off balance. He needs either one more eye black or to take it off altogether.
It's feng shui, man. Feng shui at its simplest form. He's
maybe
off
he just
balance.
Needs to change the eye. Maybe he needs to go under the other eye.
Ooh, I like that. I like that.
All
idea.
Right. Well, with the Bills, most people know you know, quite a few people are still listed on the injury report, but most of them were full participants today. Dawson obviously is going in for wrist surgery. There is no timetable for his return. Quentin Morris is still a limited participant, or no, sorry, he still did not participate. So we might be going into the game Thursday with just one tight end, and then, you know, possibly Reggie Gilliam as a, you know, potential if we need it. But there won't be any more 12 personnel for a little while, I have a feeling. So Ed Oliver.
Well, do they have a tight end on the practice squad?
I mean, we had, I don't know anymore, to be honest with you. It's slipping my head. We did have one person, but we did let him go when we brought somebody else on. So I don't know who we still have on there.
Right.
But,
well, I think Reggie can fill in, but it'll be off the ball.
Yeah. So, you know, right now, I think that my biggest concern is Ed Oliver and Jordan Phillips. They've both been limited. We need both of them to be healthy and in there. It's going to be, you know, a big deal to get them healthy. And you did mention that Tampa Bay is not, has not been great running the ball, which, it, you know, is a good thing when it come, when you have a whole bunch of injured interior linemen. But it's still, you know, when you have two of the better interior linemen, we missed Ed Oliver last week. So hopefully they'll both be able to be a full go. Vaughn, he's kind of been in there as a, you know, vet rest slash knee. So I don't know if they're just still trying to ease him in, or if there's anything to be worried about, or if there's been any swelling or anything. They're all saying no. They're all saying he's fine. I want to hope and believe that we didn't bring him back too soon.
Well, I mean, he hasn't done very much, even when he's come back.
But that's the concern, you know? Like, he's only had about 20 reps per game, and then he was down to, I think, 11 this last. Like, it's... I don't quite remember the snap counts that I looked at briefly. So I don't know. Right now we need to figure out this defense, and it's a little concerning.
Age is undefeated and untied. No matter how good a shape you get yourself into, it's really, really hard once you start creeping up there. And I just think maybe that, you know, I would almost bet that he's got some swelling issues and some things like that, just from that thing not being super, super happy yet. But, you know, he'll eventually be back to where he needs to be. So anyway, Sarah, it's been awesome as always. I'm fired up for you. 50 games is a big deal. You know, we'll start the next half century Thursday night. Hopefully it's better than number 50. And that it comes with a win. And we will be back here next Wednesday, 9 Eastern, 8 Central, our normal time. And we'll hit all those comments. As always, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button. It helps us out. We appreciate you. And we'll be back with more next week. And as always, one love and go Bills.
Go Bills.